Okay, so this is the last week of the Academic Skills course by Academia One, and we'll be looking at today the very last steps you have to do in your dissertation writing in order to get towards that distinction or very high grade that you all want to have. So often in dissertation writing, you have very good, as markers, we get to see very good dissertations in terms of ideas, in terms of arguments, content, the literature reviewed, and so on. But then some of the dissertations are lacking on the presentation aspect of it. Some have quite a few mistakes. It can be, of course, grammar mistakes, spelling mistakes, or other kind of mistakes. And what I want to say today is all those mistakes can be avoided with leaving enough time before you submit to be able to do those final checks. And we'll look today at a kind of a checklist, a last minute, I called it a last minute checklist that we can use before we submit the dissertations. And also the other kind of mistakes in terms of the presentation, in terms of figures, illustrations, and so on can also be avoided if with careful proofreading. So the first tip before we start onto the getting into the detail of the topic and having some exercises on this, the first step and the first tip to get to sort out those issues around language and presentation is to leave sufficient time before you submit. So if you're submitting on, let's say, a Friday, leave at least from Monday, on Monday before the Friday deadline. I would suggest that the draft is done, so you can almost focus only on reading it again, thinking about it. I also recommend you read your draft and maybe have like a day of a break and just reflect on what you've written. Don't look at it for a day and then come back with a pair of fresh eyes, and you'll be able to see to spot more of those mistakes that can be avoided. So let me share my screen now. So this last session is called the polishing your language to move your dissertation up a grade. I'm not saying that necessarily having, very, perfect grammar or perfect illustrations would necessarily get you a distinction, but often what makes the difference between, let's say, a 68% and a 70 in undergrad essays is really this language and presentation. And for dissertations as well, you can have something that's very good in terms of argument and in terms of the ideas presented. But if the ideas don't they are not presented in a professional way, in a consistent way, then you can lose some marks because of that. So that's what we want to avoid today by some very simple steps you can take in order to do that. So in this seminar, the key learning outcome is zooming on this issue of language and presentation, improving, hopefully, language and presentation in your dissertation. We'll start as usual with some group reflections or some general questions on the home exercise. I know a few of you have sent the home exercise to me already. So we'll look at some examples from you from the first part, from the reflection part. And then actually with the second part, when you had a text in part B of the home exercise, I will actually do a small live demonstration on this. And I copy-pasted the text in a Word document. So I will show you from a proofreader's perspective, because I'm also proofreading a lot of academic work alongside my teaching. So I will show you what goes through a proofreader's mind and what kind of mistakes can be corrected very, very quickly, especially if you have little time before you submit to do those last changes. Then we have some slides on the theory behind this. So we look at where do language and presentation sit in the marking criteria, how much do those things count in terms of the marking criteria, a few very common and avoidable mistakes. So we'll look at some things that are really common in dissertations that could be avoided if you have spent, one day or a few more hours on your proofreading. And then a last-minute dissertation checklist with some questions to ask yourself just before you submit, and finally some very simple solutions to reduce the word count. So there's two different kind of issues. There are students who struggle to meet the word count, who need to write more to get to, let's say, 10,000 words dissertation word count, or 15,000 or whatever word count your university has. But in a lot more cases, I would argue, especially if you do original research, especially if you do an interview study, experiments, if you do your own data collection and write up the analysis, often it's the case that you struggle with the word count in a sense you have to reduce the word count. This happened in my PhD, for example. The PhD is usually between in social sciences between 80,000 and 100,000 words. And when I began writing my analysis, it went a bit over the word count. And there's some very simple tricks in a way to reduce the word count without losing the meaning and without removing ideas and removing paragraphs from your writing, because you don't want to make the argument less complex. You want to make the language more simple and more economical. Then we'll have a quick demonstration with, I mean, I called it like the small things that matter in an MSc dissertation. And we'll actually, it's a bit different because in the last weeks, we look at different master's dissertations that could be improved quite significantly. So we looked at things like abstracts, we looked at things like introduction, conclusion, looking at the paragraph level, and so on. But today we'll be looking at, because it's the last session and the session is, the course is about getting closer to the distinction in your dissertation. So we'll be looking at an MSc dissertation, which is a bit different because it's a scientific dissertation. So most of the stuff that we looked at were on in social sciences. And we'll be looking at an MSc dissertation that actually got a distinction. So I'll be looking at what are the things that from a language and presentation style make it a distinction material. Then we'll have, as usual, some questions, last questions and discussions. And of course, you, as always, ask questions during the seminar. And then we have the last 10 minutes or so, because it's the last session, I have very, very short questionnaire. So we'll spend like a couple of minutes to have to do the course feedback. And after we do the course feedback questionnaire, I will award the course certificates, because everyone will get a course certificate for completion of this course. And I will share those on the screen. So kind of like an online mini graduation ceremony, but I will also send you those certificates via email at the end. So when I send the materials, I will send everyone the materials at the end of this this seminar, and I'll also send an individual email to each of you with your attached certificate in case you need that in a PDF format. Okay, so I think Charlie is joining as well now. Okay, so I just, okay, I think he's, hello Charlie. Congratulations to Charlie on his submitting his dissertation, by the way. That's a great achievement. So let's move on to the home exercise now. And we'll look at reflecting on your own practice. And I brought an example from you as well. So let's start with the general questions as usual. So thinking about, even if you haven't done this home exercise, that's fine, because everyone can have an answer to those questions. So we're thinking about this period between, you know, you having a dissertation draft, you having a full dissertation draft, and you actually submitting your work. How long is this period between you saying, okay, I'm done with this draft, I need to proofread it to check it again, and this actual date of submission? So how long is this period usually in your experience, and what do you do in this period? What do you focus on in those last days before the deadline? Do you make a list of any things that you should do? Do you have a kind of a routine every time you submit an essay, you know, kind of having, you know, three key steps or three things to look at, or like a list of different to-do list? And also thinking about this aspect as well, do you usually proofread your dissertation yourself? You know, some students do proofread themselves. Some students prefer to have a friend or a colleague to give a second opinion on it. And some students also use professional proofreaders. Like, for example, Academia One has a proofreading service as well, and many other companies do. So what do you usually do? And, you know, do you think that's a good strategy? So maybe let's start with Charlie, because Charlie submitted his dissertation. So he can tell us all what, you know, what he did in those last days before submitting the dissertation. What are the steps to do before submitting? And then we can see an example from you, and then others can comment as well. Do you want to comment, Charlie? And congratulations again.
All right, thank you, Alexandra. Hey, good afternoon, everyone. So I just submitted my dissertation yesterday. So I would say in the, what are the steps to, in the end, so because I've done my dissertation draft and I sent it to my supervisor, and my supervisor was quite responsible and sent back to me a lot of comments, literally a lot of comments. I was like, wow, that's a lot. I have to basically rewrite it. But yeah, that didn't take that much time, and it took me like a week and a half time to basically reorganize everything, because the things that there, what I was actually doing was basically like two things: reorganize the like order of things, make it more clear, make the logic more clear, and maybe add a little bit more references and analysis to make some paragraphs more organic. And then the last step is to decrease the word count, basically make it more like concise, and also make it make my work suit into the 11,000 words that domain the word limit. And
so was it much over the word limit?
Yeah, it was a lot more than the word limit at the beginning, the draft. Because I didn't know. I was like, well, I was not unsure about if I should add this or not. I always add it just in case, so my supervisor can let me know. Because I think everyone has a dissertation. Everyone who's writing a dissertation has a dissertation supervisor, and they will always be there to tell you what's extra, what's too much, and you can decrease the word count.
Was it easy to decrease the word count? Like, did you have like any kind of strategies that...
To decrease the word count?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I spend literally a lot of time on it. So basically read through them. Like if there's something I think might be extra, I read through them like three times to make myself really clear what is extra, and then make things more concise. So use clearer, shorter like words or sentences for one thing, and also try my best to decrease everything irrelevant. But also there's one thing I find quite different here in my dissertation from other previous shorter essays, is that some things in the ethnography chapter or the introduction chapter, they don't have to be 100% necessarily linked to your arguments, because it's a big project. It's a bigger project than the smaller essays. So the marker has to somehow know your interests, know your kind of the background of the things, instead of getting straight to the arguments. I think that's something I find different. Yeah. Might not be true, but that's like my social anthropology, the anthropology of education dissertation, that's what my supervisor suggests me to do. So put something, might not be that relevant, but just make it more organic at the beginning. No need to be so many words, but I have to put
Yeah, I think that's right. Like, especially in some social science disciplines, especially if you write about, a certain context or a case study that the marker might not, be familiar with. For example, when I did my PhD thesis, I did some research in two particular local authorities in the UK. And like in my thesis, I have a few paragraphs, a few sentences about the context, about why did I choose those areas and what's, different and what's interesting about those areas, which are, if you remember the one of the seminars we did about descriptive compared to analytical writing, there are some parts in the dissertation where the writing is more descriptive because you need this kind of context background to what you're saying, whereas other parts are more analytical, especially in your discussion and findings. Does anyone else want to share like anything on those questions? What do you usually do? Maybe let's focus on the day before submission. How does your day before submission usually look like in terms of, before you submit an essay in the past? Anyone wants to comment on that?
Alexandra.
Yeah.
So regarding this question, I also, to be honest, I didn't really... I didn't really know the answer, to be honest, because I was trying my best to focus on everything. I would like to hear someone else, like if they've got a much like clearer answer with their own like thoughts.
maybe I should share, like, there's one of example from you, which I thought is quite good. I got one of the homework listed, like kind of like a checklist of what to do from the draft to submission. So maybe we can look at this all together and kind of comment if we can add anything to this kind of checklist. So this kind of checklist say, okay, so first checking the whole structure of the dissertation. Yeah, I think that's good, checking, you know, especially your table of contents, thinking like whether you have all the chapters that you need, that all your sub sections in the chapters are in the table of contents and so on. So checking this kind of structure, check whether the dissertation is logical and everything, you know, is relevant. But then we discuss what Charlie mentioned, that sometimes you need a bit more context for some particular disciplines, whereas in others, especially in the sciences, it's more straightforward. The structure is more rigid in a way than in a social science dissertation. Checking arguments and checking if paragraphs are logical, and also between paragraphs, I think that's a good point, you know, how the paragraphs flow from one another, whether you need like any kind of perhaps like a sentence that connects several paragraphs. Very important, yes, checking grammar, spelling, sentences, sentence structure, checking whether the titles clearly describe the contents. I thought that's a really interesting and good point to make, because often you have, especially in social sciences, in the sciences it's a bit easier because you usually speak about very specific things, so the subtitles usually would reflect what is being spoken about. But often in social science dissertations, you have more vague subtitles the headings of your sections are a bit vague. So I think it's important to think about whether you have descriptive subheadings. So if I had, I don't know, the literature review, and I divide my literature review into three kind of themes, perhaps, it's important that those kind of subheadings are descriptive of what the theme actually is, instead of something that's a bit more vague. Checking very final things, whether you have, you know, all the information needed in the dissertation. Referencing, yeah, that's actually a good point, because often, even if you use a reference manager, sometimes there can be mistakes in the references, so it's always good to double check even the reference list at the end. Page numbers, yes, I mean, this sounds quite, you know, quite simple, but I did see quite a lot of dissertations without page numbers and without table of contents, and I think those are very small things that do make a difference, because it shows that you're organized and it shows that you pay attention to detail, which is important in, you know, showing your academic skills. And yeah, cover sheet, file name, and all those kind of, you know, university, I would group them as, you know, if you respected all those university requirements for your specific dissertation and course, such as Charlie mentioned, the word count, but also if you included all the information that needed to be included there. Would anyone have, you know, thinking about your own practice and what you usually do before essay submission, do you have anything else to add to this checklist, or is that, you know, enough? Are there enough things to do before submission? Wait, there's someone trying to speak, or who's on? Oh, I think Gina raised her hand.
Hello.
Hello.
Before I share my answer, I wanted to say thank you and goodbye, because I have a class at 3, so I might not be able to attend our graduation. That's a shame. Anyways, my last step before submission is I always ask my sister, who does not have any background in my discipline, to read my dissertation to see she understands at least the flow of the arguments. So sometimes that would give me the last minute feedback on the clarity or last minute changes.
Yeah, I think it's often like a very good strategy, because, you know, we're often told, even especially in PhD studies, but also in masters, we work on or we research very complicated phenomena, and it's very important that our research can actually be understood by others. It doesn't have to, especially for people who are outside our field. So I think it's a very good strategy to get someone, you know, when I was a master's and an undergrad student, I asked my partner, for example, to who doesn't have an academic background, to read and say, you know, if it makes sense to him and whether, you know, there is anything else that, you know, stands out for him or whether he understands at least the argument. It's a good strategy to ask someone like, yes, like your sister or your friend or your housemate to read your essay or dissertation, actually ask, you know, what's my main argument? And if they can tell you what's your main argument, it means that the argument is strong, because it means that someone who hasn't studied and hasn't read all the things you read actually understands, you know, what you're writing about. So definitely very good suggestion. No worries about, you know, having another class. I will send to everyone the certificates anyway by email, but I thought I will share them in the class as well, and Victor is coming. Okay, so I'm moving on to this next part of the home exercise. A few of you sent me different versions of proofreading this text. And what I will do is that I'm stopping sharing the slides, and I put everything in a Word document. Let me see if I can find which tab, because I have a number of demonstrations. Okay, here it is, the text. So this is the text as it was in the exercise. So I thought, because some of you didn't have time to do the exercise or some had time, we can just look at this together, and I could just give you a little bit of perspective from a proofreader point of view to see, you know, maybe have 5 minutes on this to see how can we edit this, how can we make the language better, spending very little time on it. And of course, you can also contribute to this exercise, especially those who did the proofreading. So usually what I found, you know, when I proofread my own work and also others' work, especially if I know there's quite a lot of work and quite a lot of changes to be done, I usually just separate. So let's say we have, you know, this first paragraph, I usually just separate the sentences so I can see them more clearly, and I could see them if there's like any kind of inconsistency. And then I start, you know, I start one by one. So let's look, for example, at the first sentence. So that's kind of, we imagine we already have a draft. We imagine it's our draft. It's our introduction part of the draft. And we have very little time before the deadline to proofread this. And we don't have, let's imagine we don't have any friend or family member who can read it. And we also don't have time to go to a professional proofreader, because they require like more advanced notice usually, although there are some short notice services available as well. So let's look at the first sentence. So I'll go, okay, introduction. In Japan, there is a limited amount of research and academic work that focuses on marginalized groups, which disregards their experiences. The first thing that stands out is the repetition. So let's also imagine you need to reduce the word count significantly. So you can just start, okay, to make it like even shorter, you can change that sentence and say something like, there is limited research. You don't need an academic work. If you want to make it, if you are referring mainly to academic work, you can, say there is limited academic research and combine the two. On marginalized groups in Japan. And then this is kind of, you know, a topic sentence in a way, because saying, well, there's limited academic research on marginalized groups. You can also add this. I mean, I'm not sure how much kind of, you know, meaning does this add, because I think it would be more suitable for a next sentence saying, well, you know, experiences of marginalized groups are often disregarded. or you can even start with that. So maybe you can say, maybe we can combine the limited research on marginalized groups with disregarding experience of marginalized groups and saying the experiences of marginalized groups are often disregarded in academic research. Research in Japan. I think it depends like very much on the meaning you want to convey. In a way, this has changed the meaning a little bit of the sentence, but it's a bit like stronger, and also it's a bit clearer. And then you go on to do your case study. So let's look at the second sentence, maybe saying, okay, this is the case for Japanese queer women who face more oppression, both as women and as queer women. Again, this is a bit repetitive. So first of all, like one quick mistake to spot here is you put these two P's when you have a page range. So when you have this, but when you have one page, you either put this, or if you have this reference tag, you can put this as well. And this will reduce the word count because if you use this style with page P, full stop followed by the page number, then you'll have a word extra. And if you do this, you have one less word. And if you have 50 different references in your dissertation, and you'll save at least 50 words if you remove those and you adopt this style. But make sure your style is consistent and it fits with the university requirement. And if there's flexibility in the university requirement, then you can use this to save the word count. So let's look again in the second sentence. The experiences of marginalized groups are often disregarded in academic research in Japan. This is the case of queer women who face oppression, because if you say who face more oppression, it means, you know, the question is like compared to whom, compared to what other marginalized group. So I would say who face oppression both as women and queer people to identities that intersect, to make it a bit more, you know, clearly. And then you add reference at the end. So already it sounds, you know, a bit clearer. So this is kind of, those two sentences we did is kind of what, you know, would be like a kind of a more detailed. So usually when you have a proofreader, like an actual, you know, professional proofreader, you can have different styles of proofreading. You can have proofreading that only corrects your grammar, spelling, and punctuation mistakes. You can have proofreading that looks at the sentence structure as well and make it sound a bit more academic. And you can have different, you know, proofreading that significantly alters the structure of the paragraphs to make it more clear, coherent, and so on. So this is what I say is kind of in between. I did rephrase sentences, but I did keep the meaning and I didn't necessarily question the content. I just kind of took this content as at face value and then I rewrote it to sound more academic and more coherent. So maybe the next sentence, let's look at what, so this takes a longer time. Maybe we can look at one sentence to see how you can you know, proofread this this quicker without rephrasing every single of your sentences. So this sentence is quite long. So let's see, it has 32 words. So let's see how we can reduce this sentence. So let's say I want to reduce the word count of this sentence. So I copy-pasted it there again. Okay. So the visibility of queer women in Japan is generally very restricted and there is a lack of progression specifically for queer women, let alone other members of the LGBT community in Japan. Usually when you have a long sentence, the first thing you can think about is, can I split this sentence in two or more shorter sentences? But in this case, I mean, you can argue that there are two ideas. So one being, well, the visibility, so queer women, so the visibility of queer women in Japan is very restricted. So in the second part of the sentence is there's this lack of progression, which again is quite a vague thing. So we can think about how can we make that sound sound a bit more specific. So we can start with this saying, it depends on the student meant, you know, is it like queer women are not very visible in public spaces or in the media, in, you know, where, you know, where is this? But let's assume we don't exactly know about this, what the exact meaning was. So we can say queer women, I mean, we can even say to cut the word count, we can say Japanese, but this is an assumption on my side because maybe we refer to queer women of different nationalities in Japan and not only Japanese queer women. But let's assume that that's what the student meant. But if not, we can just say queer women in Japan. so we can start, it's better to start with the subject usually to kind of reduce the word count and using active voice. So we can say Japanese queer women are, so we're saying the visibility for queer women is very restricted. So what does this mean? So it means that Japanese queer women are almost invisible in public debates or, you know, in whatever the student meant. Let's say, let's say in public debates. And then we can say something like, moreover, I'm not sure what the student meant by this lack of progression. I assume it means that there's little progressive policies or progressive politics in this sense. But we can say something like, moreover, there is a lack of progressive policies for this group and LGBT communities in general. And let's see what we have done. So now I have 25 words. I'm sure we can come up with a version that's even more, that has even fewer words, but let's say that we're happy with 25 words, and it sounds a bit more more clear now. And then if you just want to be very, very quick, let's look at this second sentence here. So we had an example of rephrasing, we had an example of reducing word count and splitting long sentence into two, and maybe let's have an example of correcting some small mistakes. Therefore, it is important to explore the perspective of ostracized groups in order to be able to place focus specifically on their experiences, which is often looked over. So this is 28 words. So now it's version one. And how can we reduce this word count without rephrasing everything over again? Is first of all putting an active voice and then eliminating unnecessary words. So we can say something like, therefore, exploring the perspective of ostracized groups is important. Or maybe can enable researchers to focus specifically on their experiences, on which is often overlooked. Could focus specifically on their overlooked experiences. And now we're having 17 words. So I think what I want to show is that you can have, you know, very kind of quick ways to proofread this. Of course, like, I'm proofreading a lot of papers, and it's kind of, I do this quicker because it's kind of what I do a lot of my time. But what we have seen in this sentence, for example, is, you know, starting with, you know, the actual subject. So what is important? You know, this exploring this perspective is important, right? So we don't necessarily have to say it is very important to do this if you want to cut the word count. Then again, introducing a subject enables whom? Researchers. What do researchers do? You know, to focus. I would even remove specifically, because focus implies that there is, you know, a specific thing you're working on. So I would say to enable researchers to focus on their overlooked experiences. And in that kind of situation here, it's something that happens very common in dissertations that you can actually cut a lot of words with, is if you have something like we had before, which are often something, you know, that's something like which are often looked over. So it was which are looked over. That was the original. So often you have things like which are often considered unimportant or whatever it may be. This can often become can be in front of the noun. So for example here, which are often looked over means overlooked, and what are overlooked, what is overlooked in this situation is the experiences of those ostracized groups in this sentence. So here is how we cut five words very quickly, and now we have 16. So I mean, I can go on and on over this this text, but those are just some ideas of, you know, different kind of strategies. One is if you have a lot of time at your disposal, if you have like a week or so for your dissertation proofreading, you can go line by line and try to rephrase your draft. You can focus on splitting long sentences and making, just improving the clarity. Or if you have less time, you can focus on what kind of quick fixes can I have to do this. Okay, let's go back to the slides. So this is just kind of to show different kind of perspectives, and in your home exercises for, I think I read like three of them today, which are sent today. You did employ a variety of those techniques. And often when you proofread, you kind of do pretty much all of those different techniques. But if you are running out of time, I do suggest doing things like we did in the third example, just trying to avoid repetition and trying to summarize some parts that are perhaps not necessary in to support the argument. Okay, so I'm moving on to the theory slides, because we have the last 10 minutes or so with Victor today. So I'm trying to finish the class before Victor comes to the meeting. So how, now the question is, we saw just some very practical things on the home exercise that everyone had a chance to look at, to the text. And now we're moving on to thinking more about this, about those two aspects, language and presentation, and giving some practical tips about how to improve on this. So as in most seminars so far, we're looking at how to situate those aspects that we can improve, that everyone can improve on in their academic skills. How can we situate those aspects in the marking criteria? So language and presentation, we use the same scheme as we always have done from UCL, from a master's subject specific marking criteria. And I know a few of you have different types of marking criteria in your university, and some of those are not so detailed, but usually even in the very kind of broad marking criteria, you do have something about the use of language and about presentation. It can be phrased differently. Sometimes you have things in marking criteria like presented in a professional way or clear presentation or something like that, but they all mean the same thing. It's about the use of language and presentation. So here, when we look at the exceptional or the outstanding or excellent there are some differences. So let's look at writing and communication. So let's look perhaps at, you know, comparing this 70 to 79 to the more, you know, higher grades. One key difference is that the very, very high marks, like 90 plus, which is quite, I would say, very rare in social sciences, more common in sciences, but yeah, indeed very infrequent overall. What you can see here is, you know, for the exceptional marks, saying reads as if professionally copy edited. So that's kind of like what I showed in the examples, different types of proofreading. So it has to be kind of this, like the standard, as if someone who's a professional proofreader edited your dissertation. Same here for exceptional presentation with impeccable format and references. This means, again, no mistakes, you know, mixing different fonts, different formats, or kind of not adhering to the elements of style in your dissertation requirements. But this doesn't mean, so even if the, kind of those exceptional marks, usually, yeah, dissertation has to look like something that, you know, is basically of publishable standard, which is something very difficult to do, especially on your own. But if we look at the other kind of marking criteria, you can get a very good grade. You can get indeed a distinction without it necessarily having to be perfect. But what is very important here, mentioned as important here, which is interesting in presentation and references, is formatting visuals and referencing actively contribute to the argument. And it's something I want to stress today, because often students put, copy paste different graphs or tables or something that, you know, maybe like it's a bit relevant from a reading. So first of all, obviously you have to reference that table, like from the source that it was published in. But then again, the question for the marker is, is this illustration actually relevant to the argument? When you have, look at, for example, different, when you have findings, like when you have experiments and you have your own illustrations, it's quite easy to incorporate those in the argument, because let's say you have a data table with some statistical model, you're going to describe that, you're going to discuss that in your discussion. So it's easy to incorporate it within your argument. But often there are other illustrations students use, like for example, when you speak about your methodology, you know, sometimes you want to perhaps put a graph or a table or something that illustrates that from another source and reference that such. And sometimes it's more difficult to tell how this actually contributes to your argument. And same with style and word choice greatly enhances ideas and demonstrates verbs. So what this actually means is that, you know, don't use vague words, that the words you use to communicate your arguments have to mean, you know, what they actually mean and actually enhance your ideas. Now, to get around like 70%, you can see that it's all about fluency, fluency of ideas. Again, the transitions between paragraphs, the language being fluent, easy to read, and still very good, you know, good visuals and, you know, perfect referencing is still required for that. So let's look now at some common mistakes that can be easily avoided. And I deliberately selected the mistakes that can be avoided with enough time and careful proofreading. So a lot of dissertations that are submitted still have quite a lot of spelling, grammar, and punctuation mistakes. And for spelling and grammar, it's quite easy to leave some of those mistakes in if you don't have a proofreader or someone else who looks over your work, especially if your first language is not English. Like in my case as well, I still check my work sometimes, because often there are some particular phrases or constructions that perhaps I'm not so familiar with, and I would like someone else to check my work before submitting. But on this kind of topic, the reality is, and there's a saying in academia, that no matter how many times you read your work, when you open again your submitted work or your thesis, you know, you may keep a printed copy of your dissertation for future at home. And when you read it again, you'll always notice another spelling mistake, no matter how many times you read it. And this even happens with some published books. I mean, I still find spelling mistakes in some published books that I'm reading, you know, for my own work. So it's, you know, it's very difficult to be completely perfect, but you want, I mean, if you have a couple of mistakes in a 10,000 word dissertation, that won't lose you marks. It's more about, you can think about, if you have more than like one or two mistakes per page, then it becomes an issue, because then it means that you haven't paid attention to checking your work and to proofreading before submitting it. But what I would say, if even if you don't have a proofreader or you don't have, you know, friends or family who are willing to read your work, start with a spell checker in whatever word processor you're using. But what I actually recommend, which works very well for me, is to always print your dissertation before you submit your draft and read it on paper. I usually print it with quite a lot of spacing in between, with maybe like 1.5 space. So you're able to actually see the lines clearly. It depends what you're working on. I work, for example, I have a very small MacBook laptop. So it's quite difficult to read, you know, continuously for hours. Your eyes get tired. You won't be able to spot the same mistakes as you do if you print it in a larger font on paper. And you can take the paper with you, go for a relaxing, you know, now socially distanced walk in the park, and, you know, get your dissertation with you and actually have a relaxing environment where you can actually focus on the text and have no more other distractions. You just have the white page with the text on it, and that's much easier to spot mistakes on. The other thing that counts in the marking criteria is the formatting. If you have specific formatting requirements, like, I don't know how many times we had in university essays that said in the module handbook, you need to double space it, or you need to space it 1.5, or you need a font, 12 or 10 size font, or 11, usually 11 is minimum, 12 is usually standard. And I still had dissertations and essays submitted that had, you know, very, very tiny fonts, like 10, or you have really to think about your marker to, you know, for the dissertation to be, you know, inviting and easy to read. And it's also quite frustrating when, especially if you have a lot of figures and you don't format them correctly. And I often got dissertations where figures were like overlapping over text, and I couldn't really figure out what the text behind the figure was. And those are all things I know very well. It's because the student rushed before the deadline and the student didn't have time to check again the figures, to check figure numbering, or to check whether the figures overlap with the text, and probably very, you know, rushed to print the dissertation, and then this happened, and this, or empty, like even empty figures, sometimes when you import figures from another, maybe a statistical program, if you're using that, you know, it's very good to check, because sometimes I got dissertations with, you know, a space for a figure and the numbering, but there was no figure in it, so you want to avoid that. So do make sure that, you, as I always say in those seminars, you make it easier for your marker to give you a distinction or a good grade by presenting your work in a professional way. Incomplete or incorrect references. This is very common in dissertations, you know, missing or years in the references, inconsistent. Sometimes you have, I don't know, like one reference from, I don't know, Jones 2020, and then you have Jones 2019, and there's only Jones 2020 in the bibliography, and all those things can be avoided. Again, also, this, if you're using something like EndNote and you don't format correctly the fields, especially if you have non-standard references, and EndNote retrieves the references at the end and you don't check them again, if EndNote is missing some information that you forgot to input, or if you're retrieving those records from the online library and those records are incomplete for some reason, you will have in the bibliography something like error, record not found, or like information not found, and it will be also printed. So make sure you check it before, because you can make sure that either your info is updated on the reference manager that you're using, or you can edit it directly in the dissertation. So don't forget that. The more work, you know, those are very simple fixes, like things like spelling, grammar, you know, formatting, incomplete or incorrect references. But there's also a very common mistake that I always, you can get markers, you know, less likely to give you a very good good grade in terms of presentation and language, is using a lot of redundant words. So we heard from from Charlie, who had the opposite issue that he had too many words and had to cut words. There are many strategies to cut words. But often some students are on the lower end of the word count. So let's say you have a dissertation that has to be between 10,000 and 12,000 words. So let's say it's 10,000, 12,000. And you have done 10,000, but you think maybe more words is better. And you're trying to kind of add stuff that's not really relevant. So don't do that. If the dissertation is, you know, between 10 and 12,000, and you have a draft that's 10,000, and it's, you know, the argument flows, it's okay. Don't try to push it further, because the range, that's what it means. It means that it's acceptable to be 10,000 as well. And it's a range, and it can be up to 12,000. So don't assume the more words is better. What matters is the coherence. So it's better sometimes to be on the shorter end of the word count than be on the longer end of the word count and add unnecessary words. So if you're not sure about a certain word that's used, you know, always ask yourself, what does this word actually add to the paragraph or to my sentence? And, you know, if the answer is nothing or not really, not much, do consider removing it. And the tip on this, so the tip that I have with proofreading specifically is, you know, to print, to always print the dissertation and read it on paper in a nice environment. And with redundant words, what often helps me and a lot of other students, especially from PhD students, is reading aloud your paragraphs, because usually when we proofread, we read on our laptop, in the Word document, and we read inside our head. And we don't necessarily know how this sounds if this text was projected with voice. And it's actually quite helpful, because when you read aloud, you may spot other mistakes, you know, just psychologically speaking, you may spot other mistakes that are not spotted when you read with the voice inside your head. Okay, so last minute dissertation checklist. That's again, kind of like the originality checklist we did with when Summer was teaching. It's kind of like a tool for you to keep to kind of double check things when before you submit your dissertation. As I said before, very small changes can make a difference between very good or excellent or, you know, distinction and merit. Because a lot of the work, you know, is obviously most of the work and most of the grades, the marks will be about the argument, the structure, the ideas, your actual findings if you're doing research. But I would say maybe about, you know, 10% or so of the whole thing is related to language, presentation, and word choices and things like that. So in a way, you can see how this could maybe make a difference between two different grade brackets in that sense. First and foremost, spell check. I really recommend the word spell check has become better over years. So now it catches out most mistakes. But, you know, spell checking is not only about, you know, very basic mistakes. I forgot to put, you know, a certain character in the word. It's also about meaning. So often other spell checkers, like I use Grammarly, for example, and Grammarly is also good to advise on the word choices. So often Grammarly would underline a word and saying, maybe perhaps this other word is more suitable here. So in a way, there's other software that's better at catching out mistakes than the word processor. What we looked at in the kind of the short demo we did is looking at subject and the verb. And if you're writing quite quickly, and especially if you're translating from another language, like, you know, I do sometimes, it's in this other language, your native language has a different sentence structure. It's quite, you know, it's sometimes easy to forget to, you know, for all your sentences to actually have a subject and a verb. And also it's important, especially looking at linked to grammar mistakes, is whether those are in agreement. So if you're saying something, you know, there are a lot of studies on this, you know, it's kind of easy mistake to say there is a lot of studies on this instead of there are, or like kind of very basic things that you all know, but when you're writing very quickly, it's difficult to spot sometimes. Have I explained abbreviations before using them? So when you're doing something like even standard things, I don't know, like for example, MAC, like in my field, the MAC is the Migration Advisory Committee, and I use this quite a lot in my work. So obviously I know what it is. My markers would know what it is because they're in the field, but you probably wouldn't know necessarily what it is. So it's good to always spell it out the first time you use it. So you say Migration Advisory Committee, bracket, henceforth, MAC, you know, and then you can use the abbreviation. And this would, you know, it's a lot of scientific work as well. Like sometimes it's good to use, especially if you use a new term or something that's not very well known in the scientific community, to use that first. References are the names of the authors I cite written correctly. This is something that sounds really basic, but I read dissertations so many times, and like, you know, the names of very well-known theorists and authors are wrongly spelled. So make sure you do check that. Are there any inconsistencies in references, and are especially regarding years? And is the bibliography formatted correctly? And are there any missing fills? So what I mentioned before about EndNote or reference manager that may miss some information. Then after you check, so you check the spelling, check the reference list, references inside and references at the end. The next step is to check, especially if you do a lot of work with a lot of illustrations, check the tables, figures, illustrations, table of contents, page numbers, and all that kind of all those things. So descriptive headings, that's something we mentioned in the home exercise, is very important. Are all those appearing in the table of contents? You can obviously adjust your table of contents to only contain the main chapter headings, the main subheadings, but you may have some other kind of subheadings that you want to include. Figures as well. You know, often when we edit the dissertation draft, it's quite easy to forget amending the figure. So if you had a draft and you already numbered the figures, and you said, you know, according to figure 3 on page whatever, or, you know, just according to figure 3, and then you add another figure and figure 3 becomes figure 4 and so on, it's quite easy to forget to change those, and often it can get confusing for the marker if your figures are not labeled correctly. And that's probably a seminar topic in itself, of how to do easy to read graphs, tables and figures, and how to format those. But again, make sure that, you know, especially if you do figures that have quite a lot in it, make sure that the marker can actually read it. And this is a mistake that often happens, because if you're working on, let's say, a desktop PC and you have quite a wide screen, your figures will look absolutely fine on that. But then when you print it, for some submissions that require printing, for example, it's printed on A4 paper, you're not really able to read the smaller words on the figure. And similarly, if the marker reads it on another device that perhaps has a, you know, not so good resolution on the screen, again, it can become quite difficult to read. So what I tend to do when I do any kind of figures in my work is print the page with the figure in A4. I can print it like black and white and just see like what can actually be seen in that format. Okay, and then the final, what I suggest after you do all those kind of things, a final coherence check. Are there any vague or filler words? Anything that could be done, you know, could be said more more specifically? Are there any redundant word pairs? There's many of those that will probably be a topic in itself, but things like, you know, future plans. It's very common in everyday speech to say, well, I have some future plans. But when you think about written work, Well, of course, plans are something in the future. So you can argue that this is a word that you can cut in your writing, because by saying I have plans, it means there are in the future. Or things like end result, you know, result is something you get at the end of an experiment, at the end of a project, at the end of something. So end result, again, it's something that, you know, is quite common in work that could be perhaps not used, especially if you need to reduce the word count. Can I make my writing less wordy? This is what we did in the short demonstration, when you have something which is blah, blah, blah. Like you can say, you know, you can make it as an objective. So like we did with the overlooked experiences that are usually looked over, equal overlooked experiences. So that kind of thing that could make the writing clearer. Have I used the active voice when I could, instead of the passive voice? So again, looking at the voice in the verbs that you use, and seeing whether you can, an active voice often makes your sentences in your paragraphs more easy to read and more dynamic. And finally, is the word count within the limits? And if it is and it's on the shorter end and you don't have anything else to add, just leave it there. Don't feel pressured to add extra things that could be more redundant after. And if your word is over the word limit, if your word count is under the word limit, which shouldn't really happen at this last stage, because your draft should, you know, be able to deal with that. But then you have to think about, are there any ideas that I can expand in a bit more detail? Are there any ideas that can be supported by more references? Or can I develop more on the analysis and discussion? Because especially if you do original research, is something that often you can develop on. Or can I add something in the conclusion, like especially if you haven't added too much about limitations or things like that? And if the word count is over the word limit, which is usually what happens with dissertations, then we have today three easy ways to reduce the word count, but there are many other ways, but probably we need another session on focusing only on those kind of techniques. So first easy way is to remove unnecessary adverbs and adjectives. So things like importantly, crucially, interestingly, notably, noticeably, and many, many other adverbs. Usually, I mean, sometimes they do have a role, especially when to stress a particular thing, but often in an everyday speech as well, they don't add much to the actual substance of what we're saying. So especially when they're used excessively. So if you have, you know, in every other sentence, something like importantly or crucially, well, of course, this information is important because otherwise you wouldn't have included it in the paragraph. There are some specific circumstances, especially if you want to stress something, you know, like with crucially, for example, but often the meaning is through the sentences. So you don't necessarily, in most cases, those adverbs can be taken out of the text without having a very severe impact on the meaning. So the good strategy here is if you have excessive adverbs, I mean, you can even do a control F in your document to see how many times you use something like importantly, or, you know, if you find yourself using like some particular words very frequently in your writing, you can just control F and see how many times you use them, and then go through each instance where this word is used and think about, you know, is this word relevant here? So you can, you know, remove the ones that you think they're excessive, and then read the text again and think about whether the meaning, what you want to say in your argument, whether the meaning has been preserved. On the active voice dimension in the checklist, so that's very, very, very common in academic writing, especially in the literature review. Literature reviews are usually very passive. Sometimes passive voice is needed from a grammatical point of view, but other times you can rephrase it and move towards a more active voice. So in this example here, it's not a massive word count, but it's about 30-40% reduction in word count, just moving from passive to active voice. So passive voice, it has been researched. So we hear this a lot in dissertation. It has been researched, it has been studied, it has been said, it has been noted. So it has been researched that attitudes towards migrants are impacted by local level politics. There's many easier ways to say this, starting with the subject. So what is the subject? Local level politics. What does it do? It impacts. What does it impact? Attitudes towards migrants. And then reference. So if you say it has been researched, probably you have a reference, because otherwise you didn't say it has been researched, or, you know, the research shows. So why not start with, you know, having the subject, then the verb, the direct object here. So what is the actual idea, the actual argument, and then the reference. Or you can say, according to the reference, you know, local level politics impact actors towards migrants, and then you can develop in the next sentence in what ways it does, because that's just a very broad kind of example. Circumlocutions are, you know, kind of collections of words that can be said in fewer words. So usually they're kind of like long sequence of words that can always be summarized to something. So we have an example here. Due to the fact that, can any of you write in the chat, because that's maybe like it's a quick exercise, write in the chat, how can you find a shorter way to say that? Due to the fact that, so let's say an example, due to the fact that local level, let's use this example, the fact that local level politics impacts attitudes towards migrants, blah, blah, this happens. So how would you, is there a shorter way to say due to the fact that? So Damilara is saying, having known, so yes, it's already two words from five. Well done. Any other ideas? Anyone can think about one word? As? Do I have another suggestion? Great. Yeah, so there's many, I mean, in a lot of context, it's kind of because. So this happens, this particular phenomenon happens due to the fact that this other thing happens. You know, this phenomenon happens because this other thing happens. If it's more like a temporal kind of dimension, you can use as, you know, having known, especially good for kind of saying, you know, referring to research. Let's try another one. So concerning the matter of, how would you say that? Subject, any other ideas regarding? Yeah, regarding subject, depends on the context. So if we have in this example, for example, I would like to speak to you concerning the matter of your studies, you basically mean, I would like to speak to you about your studies. Very common one, it is necessary that. It is necessary that we research this particular phenomenon. Any ideas? How do we make that shorter? It's quite a common thing that's, I would say, it depends on the context. I would say should. Yeah, expedient. Yeah, it really depends on the context. So something like, you know, if I said, it's necessary that we as researchers, you know, listen to the experiences of marginalized groups. I could say, you know, researchers should do this, but then you don't want to be too prescriptive or too like, yeah, normative in your writing either. So it really depends on the context, but this is just showing that you can reduce the word count. There's a chance that this aspect of this research may be overlooked. Any ideas on this one? Probable, yeah, it's probable. Or probably. maybe overlooked or something like that. Okay. Okay, I'm trying to, I'll stop the share screen now. We're doing, now we're moving on to the last part of the seminar, which is this small, about the small details that matter in an MSc dissertation. So we'll be looking at an MSc dissertation this time and looking at the, some of the style and the presentation of the dissertation. And as I said, this is a dissertation that actually got a distinction. let me just, I think my internet got paused for like about 30 seconds or so. So I hope it works now. I hope everyone can see the dissertation now. Okay. So this is a dissertation for MSc in a scientific field, so in infection and immunity from UCL. And this dissertation got a distinction, as I said. So what is, you know, what's the first thing that, you know, is important, of course, as we said in other seminars, is the abstract. And the abstract is very, you know, it's particularly clear in this dissertation. So it's at the beginning, you know, it was a 250 words limit. And, you know, if we read through it, I will send, by the way, I will send this dissertation to you so you can have an example of a MSc dissertation that got a distinction. You can see how the abstract is very clearly written. But then looking more at the presentation and style, so what I particularly like about this dissertation is the very clear table of contents, and it's very descriptive, which again, it's, you know, it's a bit unfair for social scientists because it's much easier to be very descriptive on the subheadings if you work in a scientific field like this one. But it's, you know, you can already, what I'm saying is that you can already see the structure of the argument and the findings from the table of contents, which is something that the marker will first look at. So after I look at the abstract, I will look at this. So it starts, you know, the introduction really sets the context. So this dissertation is about tuberculosis research. So it looks at current treatments. It looks at different populations. And it sets out, you know, the kind of why there's a need of this research, need for researching new drugs against tuberculosis, and clearly sets out the aims of the study. So I already know as a marker from the introduction, like, yes, the topic is there. They know about the current situation. They identified a gap in 1.4. They identified a gap, and they set up the aims of the study. They don't have, you know, as in a lot of scientific dissertations, we have materials and methods that are clearly described here, and data analysis, and then we have results, which again, looking at one of the tips that applies to everyone, regardless of your topic, what I observe here as from a marker's perspective is that the headlines, the subheadings are very descriptive, and it's very good. Even if you have something, you know, quite long, you don't want to say something vague. You know, the subheadings actually tell what the paragraphs are about, what the findings are about. So what did they find? They found, you know, differential responses within this active population they researched, and then different kind of subheadings of the different aspects of the findings. And then I can clearly see the discussion and recommendations for future studies, conclusions. So when I look at this dissertation, it's, you know, it's very clearly structured and very clearly written as well. You get a look at home as well on the actual content. And it has a lot of illustrations, I would say. I'm not sure if this is because the PDF version or if it was submitted in another format, I would still say that the presentation of those could be improved, because those figures are, you know, I can see they're done in a different software, and I can see perhaps it's not very easy to read some of those, you know, the smaller text, because if you see, you know, like I can't, I mean, I know what it says, I can guess, but perhaps there's a way to make it clearer and to perhaps incorporate the figure text in the text of the actual dissertation, only have the figure as an image, and there are various ways to import that. So there's quite a lot of illustrations that are good. Say similar with tables. The tables are, you know, easy to read in the sense of they're, you know, organized. But I would perhaps work more on the, yeah, on the quality of how they're imported. It's also good to keep a kind of a consistent color scheme, so you can see all those tables with different results look quite similarly in terms of the presentation. And also paying attention at formulas and how easy to read formulas are. So I know we're running out of time on this. So I think the best thing to do is for me to send a dissertation, especially for those who work with a lot of illustrations, to see kind of what, you know, what kind of dissertation got a distinction. It's in a scientific field, but still you can look at the language and the presentation of it as well, even if you're not working in this particular field. Okay, let's see the slides again. Okay. So now we have two more things to do before, I mean, Victor should join soon, I mean, in a minute or so. But we have two more things to do, which is the feedback for this course, and then I will show you all the, we'll do like a mini award of the certificates, and then I will also send them to you via email. But before we do that, so before Victor is joining, are there any other questions on this, those kind of aspects of presentation and language before we move on to the feedback? So I'm not sure, I'll see if there's anything on the chat. Anyone has any particular questions? Okay, I think there's nothing on the chat, so that's okay. So what I will do now is, we did a short evaluation survey, and this is really just to kind of for us to at Academia One to improve future courses. So we'll have another course starting soon about how to get on a PhD program and how to you know, to decide whether a PhD is right for you, and we'll have a couple of other courses coming up on qualitative methods and quantitative methods in research in UK academia. So we're preparing a variety of other courses together with the team of PhD experts. So it would be very useful to get your feedback on this course, so then we can improve other courses and also know what you thought about this particular course. What I'll do now is I will copy paste the link. I'm trying to copy paste the link for the feedback on the chat. Okay. Let me see now. So it's on the screen as well, but I think it's easier if I just put it on the chat, because you can click straight away on the link. It only takes you a couple of minutes, only takes you 2 minutes to complete. So please, if you have time, you can just click on the link now for a couple of minutes and complete the questionnaire. And then Victor will say a few words to you about the next courses and how we can get involved more in Academia One activities. And then I will do the certificates as well at the end. So if you want, please let me know maybe on the chat. I'll leave a couple of minutes. And if you're finished with the questionnaire, do just say on the chat, we're done. And then we can look again. Or maybe once you complete as well, Victor can say something about the next course as well. And then once that once everyone completed the feedback, we can do the mini online graduation.
Yeah. Great. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Just wanted to make sure. Yes. Yeah, so it's really been such a pleasure to have everybody join us for the course. I'm sorry that I only came at the end today. I had another meeting event that I was attending, so I was able to get out a bit earlier. And so it's definitely been a very exciting time to go through the steps to kind of write the dissertation. Obviously, now we're in the period where we're actually kind of, you know, in the kind of, you know, height of the dissertation writing period, where obviously we'll be submitting in a few months. And so it's really been fantastic. And I really look forward for us to all get feedback from everyone and to see how you found the experience. We are working hard to continue to provide lots of valuable content about both how to write good academic pieces of work, but also how to make good academic decisions and be up to date with different occurrences in the university system. So we're currently producing free video material that we'll be uploading on YouTube, which will kind of give more kind of detailed answers to specific questions about the dissertation writing process and kind of any general academic skills. So whether it's about applying for so PhD or applying for further masters, these are all kind of topics we'll be talking about. And so on the note of applying for PhDs, some of you might have gotten an email from us before that. So we did have a course on applying for PhDs. And so if anybody is interested to look into that, do feel free to come to our free session. I think the next free session will be on the 22nd. If I'm not mistaken, but it is all available online. I think it is a 22nd. And apart from that, I do know that some of you have asked specific questions about kind of tutoring and kind of getting more specific kind of private sessions. And so, again, we have different experts in different fields. So, you know, as you know, Alexandra specializes in sociology and particularly in views towards immigrants from Romania. And so, kind of this whole kind of area, which is something that if anyone has any particular kind of need for specific help, we have lots of experts on our team that could give you specific tutoring and specific guidance for your dissertations. So when you're ready to submit, also if you need proofreading, since you all have done the course, you'll get a 10% discount on proofreading with us. Just tell us that you've done the course. And if you are interested then again, just send Alexandra an email and then she can connect you with one of our advisors that can kind of give you further insight into some of the things that we could do to help out. So yeah, again, it's really been fantastic. And I hope you guys are getting along well with doing the reviews while I'm kind of doing a little kind of summary chat today. You'll also kind of get a chance to, in the review, talk a little bit about the different teachers that you've had in the course, actually, which is, you know, especially interesting to kind of see which kind of teachers you thought, which styles you liked, which styles you thought could be better. And it's really great to have honest feedback so that we can all learn how we can improve and kind of learn how we can do things better. But are you ready, Alexandra, to do the certificates?
Do you prefer to do it to me to share the slides and you to award them, or should I do this myself?
That's a good question. So you mean for me to share the slides so that the certificates can be awarded?
No, I mean, I can share the slides here.
Yes, that would be great.
And they will come on one by one, but not everyone is here today, but obviously I'll email everyone the...
Yes.
PDFs at the end after I email the materials for today as well.
I'm happy to be the one to kind of, you know, verbally present it as you present it on the slides. That's excellent. It would be great if it would be ideal if we had some music, some graduation ceremony music. yeah, that would definitely be an interesting, but something we could look into in the future. Thank you for on completion of the survey. It says from a mobile phone, from an iPhone. So not sure who that is, but thanks, guys. Okay.
Okay, so cool. I have each certificate on one slide, so I'll go through them one by one. So first of all, from my side as well, well done everyone. So you now completed the Academia One academic skills course. We're very happy to hear all your contributions and all your feedback throughout the course. And I hope everyone found something useful in each seminar and will be able to further improve on the academic skills and reuse some of this material. So all those things we did in the different seminars, like all the different checklists, originality checklist, the last minute checklist from today, all the different exercises, especially the reflection exercises, can be used again as you progress your studies, especially if you want to do further studies after, or you know, especially if you don't do a PhD after, you'll need some of those material in the future. But I do hope in the meantime, those insights from the course and my feedback as well as the materials would help with your dissertation that you're currently working on. And I wish good luck to everyone for the dissertation submission. And again, congratulations to Charlie for submitting his yesterday. Yes, well done everyone. Everyone will get a certificate for the course. And now I hand over to Victor, who will be... Are you putting music on?
Who's playing music? It's great. Who's playing it? Oh, that's great. I love it. Thanks for that. Okay, excellent. So let's do a little graduation with music in the background. I love it.
Okay, we have music. That's great. Okay, so we'll start. So I present Victor from Academia One, who's awarding the certificate today.
Great. Okay, so first of all, we have Sarah Albalawi. So thank you so much, Sarah, for taking part in the course and for completing it. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the course. Damilade Faniran, thank you so much. It's so excellent to see you attend the sessions and to complete the course and to spend time with us during these 10 weeks, Damilade. Thank you. Bingchuan Jiang, it's been really fantastic for your taking part in the course. Thanks, Damilade, so you dropped if there. Thanks, Bingchuan. It's been really amazing, and I'm really happy that we've got to go on this journey together of learning about academic skills. Bingchuan, thank you. Eugene Gina Kim, it's really excellent that throughout the whole course, we got so many ideas from you and so much motivation from you. And it's really, I really wish you all the best of luck for your submission of your dissertation and your work on the dissertation for the next few months. Yunsu Li, it's really been a pleasure for you to join us on the course. And I hope that what you've learned will really prepare you for your writing of your dissertation, and we will still be here to help you after the course ends. And thank you for your contribution as well, Yunsu. Thank you. Yuchin Victoria Wang, it's been a real pleasure to have you learn with us and study with us, and I really do hope that you found some useful ideas here. I hope that we can continue to do things to help you write your dissertation with you know, us producing all this content for you, you know, and I really hope that kind of we can continue with the journey before you submit. Thank you, Ching, for everything you've done on the course. Hong Chi Charlie Xu, it's been really excellent, Charlie, to have you participate. You've always given fantastic feedback and thoughts. And it's really exciting to hear that you submitted your dissertation already. So we literally were with you, you know, from kind of like the writing stage to the very end. So it would be fantastic for you to share with others about, you know, your experience of how you were able to complete the dissertation. And again, such a pleasure to have you join us, Charlie, during this time. Xiaoqian Xu, thank you so much for taking part and for being part of the course. I think you're the one that joined a bit later, and so it's great that, you know, you still joined us and kind of got involved and really contributed. And I think that it really is something that Alexandra and I hope that you are able to kind of go off now and to, you know, have more confidence in your writing process. And, you know, again, we will be here for you. And I think it's nice for us to all kind of, you know, aim is to be more of a kind of family and, you know, to still kind of connect with you and support you and, you know, be there to help you for free with all of our kind of things that we do, guys. So thank you, Xiaoqian. Yiji Zhang, thank you so much for taking part in the course. It's been great to have you attend our sessions and to connect with us all and to share the experience together of being able to essentially take this whole challenge of writing a dissertation and breaking it down with Alexandra. And we really appreciate all of your contribution, EG, and also all of your efforts that you have showed us during the course. Thank you, EG, for taking part.
Okay, so this is the ceremony. Thank you, Victor, for presenting those, and thank you, everyone. I'll send the PDF for the certificate individually. So if there's any mistake at all that I did, or if you prefer like a different name to be used, please let me know so I can amend those as well for you if there's any mistake we have done. And I'll also send the materials as usual. So from me, thank you all for contributing. It was a really interesting experience to do all this online course. Like before this, I only did teaching in classrooms, like having a lot of like group work and seminar discussions. It's been a very interesting experience for us to do this kind of online discussion course during the COVID times. And I hope everyone gets something useful out of it. And also everyone submits their dissertation successfully and stay safe during those unprecedented times. But I'm sure you all do well in the dissertation, and good luck to everyone.